The T-Biz Podcast delivers tea news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that simultaneously heals and energizes the body as it soothes the mind. Making fine tea is a blend of artistry and craftsmanship. The $200 billion tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts global influence, employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. T-Biz will take a two-week break and return on January 10th with its 200th weekly episode. Here are this week's headlines. An overview of hot beverage trends and sales projections in the new year. Coca-Cola announces fused iced tea will enter the Canadian market as Nestle switches Nestea distribution to Keurig Dr. Pepper Canada. And save the date. The annual UC Davis Tea Colloquium is Thursday, January 30th, 2025. Plus, Young Mountain pioneers shared ownership of the specialty tea value chain. Raj Vable is committed to bridge the gap between tea farmers and tea drinkers, breaking a vicious cycle of urban migration and land degradation at a time when climate change is making things worse. He joins us today to explain his tea solution. Quote, tea creates rural jobs, revitalizes wastelands, and removes CO2 from the atmosphere. The first step was to share ownership of the tea trade with farmers by financing India's first farmer-owned specialty tea factory in Kumaul, India. Vable says that now that the factory is built and U.S. distribution deals are in place, quote, we are creating a pathway for customers to co-own Young Mountain Tea and become part of the same system as the farmers who grow and process the tea. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What happens when businesses along the tea supply chain get together and support women and children in tea communities? The Mother and Child-Friendly Seal for Responsible Business is creating long-term positive impacts, making your cup of Ceylon tea all the sweeter. Learn more at Sri Lanka motherandchildseal.org.
This report is part one of three exploring emerging and well-established tea retail and consumer trends in the year ahead. Topics include technology, tea consumption, regional differentiation, trade divergence, and the competitive beverage landscape. Let's start with technology. Artificial intelligence is favorably impacting several aspects of beverage retail by enhancing retail efficiency, accelerating the pace of new products market entry, and generating insights into consumer behavior that will enable personalized advertising and marketing with extraordinary precision. A retail trends report by eMarketer reveals that 91% of business decision makers use AI to forecast demand. 91% use AI to provide customer support. 88% use AI to optimize their supply chain. And 82% use AI to identify new suppliers. Retailers anticipate incremental gains in product gross margins due to more precise inventory and assortment planning, thanks to AI. Market growth and demand. The beverage market is expanding overall. Sales of hot beverages worldwide are projected to top $300 billion in the next 5 years, according to Statista Research, which forecasts a compound annual growth rate of 4.64% through 2029. According to Statista, the tea market is expected to outpace overall beverage growth at a 5.79% CAGR. Tea sales are projected to reach $180 billion by 2029, and specialty teas will grow from $6 billion to $10.74 billion by 2033. Next, let's look at retail differentiation and divergence. Asia-Pacific dominates the global tea market, with India and China consuming most of the world's tea. Western-style flavored and specialty teas are gaining favor. Chinese youth are experimenting with what is called new tea. Innovation is evident in juice and tea fusions and the premiumization of bubble tea globally. Dollars can be earned in exports, but supply chain disruptions, low auction prices, and a glut of black tea contribute to volatility that will continue in 2025. The downturn in the economic fortunes of Germany, a global tea hub, will slow distribution and dampen essential investment. Ultimately, Europe and Americas, however, consume only 6% of the world's tea, and the imposition of tariffs and non-tariff barriers to trade, such as sanctions, favor regional tea brands over multinationals. And finally, consumption. Tea consumption in Germany, France, and England is incorrectly perceived as declining. Mintel projects the European market to grow by 4.8% through 2028. Tea remains widespread, available in virtually every home. What is in transition is brand loyalty due to changing consumer preferences, driven by greater awareness of health and wellness benefits and the availability of a dizzying number of beverage options in a dynamic beverage marketplace. Functional tea, fusions, condition-specific tea, medicinal tea, matcha, and adaptogenic herbals compete for a share of throat previously dominated by traditional black tea in the West and green tea in the East. Coca-Cola announced it would begin distributing Fuze iced tea in Canada and no longer manufacture Nestea, a Nestle brand. Keurig Dr. Pepper, KDP, acquired the production and marketing rights and will now bottle Nestea and distribute it. The KDP agreement with Nestle Canada is effective January 1, 2025. KDP President Olivier Lemire said, quote, "This partnership reflects KDP Canada's forward-thinking approach to collaboration, emphasizing our commitment to driving value through strategic partnerships and expanding our portfolio with premium beverages." Lance Collins created Fuze Teas and non-carbonated fruit drinks in 2000 in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey. In 2007, Coke purchased the brands for $250 million, and expanded distribution. By 2015, the brand reported $1 billion in sales and is now available in 90 countries. Canada's manufacturing and distribution deal follows a similar switch in Spain, where Coca-Cola also ended a long-standing agreement with Nestle to produce Nestea. In a press release, Nestle Canada President and CEO John Carmichael expressed enthusiasm about KDP's plans to expand the brand. Nestea was introduced in Switzerland in 1948. In 2001, Nestle and Coca-Cola formed a joint venture called Beverage Partners Worldwide to distribute Nestea globally. That agreement ended in 2017, and Nestle's network of independent distributors now manufactures Nestea in most countries. KDP Canada's beverage portfolio includes more than 70 owned, licensed, and joint partnership brands in several market segments, including coffee, tea, soft drinks, juice, and mixers. KDP is the market leader in single-serve coffee brewing. Business Insight. Nestea was rebranded in 2019 with a new recipe free of artificial colors, flavors, corn syrup, and GMO ingredients. Now sweetened with stevia extract, Nestle has agreed to numerous regional distribution deals with bottlers such as KDP in Canada and Catalan brewer Dom in Spain, Andorra, and Gibraltar. The Global Tea Institute for the Study of Tea Culture and Science at the University of California, Davis, is hosting its 10th annual Tea Colloquium on January 30th, 2025. Director Catherine Burnett announced the theme of this year's all-day in-person event is Tea and Peace, Bringing Communities Together. There's no charge to attend. Burnett said, quote, "With this theme, we recognize the important role tea plays in soothing the soul and bringing people together, whether we gather to share a moment or before negotiating a deal. Through a full day of thought-provoking presentations, experts will show how the theme affects culture, society, science, health, and industry," end quote. Colloquium presentations include Tea and Depression by Klaus Lang, PhD, a professor at the University of Regensburg, Germany. Dr. Juan Fernando Ortiz on the cognitive enhancing properties of L-theanine, a presentation on brewing ration tea during World War II by Erica Rappaport, a professor of history at the University of Santa Barbara, and a look at tea and community in 17th century Kyoto, Japan, by Professor Morgan Patelka, an expert in Asian studies at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Registration is now open via eventbrite.com. Search UC Davis GTI. The event is Thursday, January 30th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at the UC Davis Conference Center in Davis, California. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change, sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why. Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish, N-I-S-H, at nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
Raj Vaibhal is committed to bridge the gap between tea farmers and tea drinkers, breaking a vicious cycle of urban migration and land degradation at a time when climate change is making things worse. He joins us today to explain his tea solution. Quote, "Tea creates rural jobs, revitalizes wastelands, and removes CO2 from the atmosphere. The first step was to share ownership of the tea trade with farmers by financing India's first farmer-owned specialty tea factory in Kumaon, India." Vaibhal says that now that the factory is built and U.S. distribution deals are in place, quote, "We are creating a pathway for customers to co-own Young Mountain Tea and become part of the same system as the farmers who grow and process the tea." The son of Indian immigrants in the U.S., Raj became intrigued by the people of the tea lands on his return to India as a Fulbright Nehru scholar. He has since spent 15 years connecting Himalayan farmers to American markets. Raj founded Oregon-based Young Mountain Organic Tea Company in 2013. The company is a purpose-driven business praised for its high-grade whole-leaf teas. Young Mountain is currently engaged in an equity crowdfunding campaign on WeFunder that has generated more than $200,000. The campaign requires a minimum investment of $250,000 and has a goal of $375,000. Quote, Ross says sharing ownership aligns everyone's values. If the tea farmers do well, so do the tea drinkers and vice versa. And if we do it right, there will be plenty for everyone, end quote. Thanks so much for joining us on the TBiz podcast. I'm a longtime admirer of your work, and I'm excited to learn more about how your business model more closely connects the two furthest ends of the tea supply chain. So we can talk a bit about the factory and the delivery of handmade teas.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And I likewise am very much a fan of the Teva's work and everything that you do, Dan. So thanks. Thanks for what you do on behalf of the industry to keep us better informed. Setting up the Kumao Tea Factory represents a tremendously exciting milestone in our work to figure out what a smallholder farmer model for Indian tea looks like. Specifically, shifting ownership of high-quality specialty tea processing facilities into the hands of farmers is a big step forward in the work to help farmers raise the quality of their teas so that they can earn more and raise the quality of their lives. Basically, we've finished chapter zero. We've set up the legal and financial systems to launch an international joint venture with shared ownership between local farmers and our company. We've constructed a world-class tea processing facility with guidance from experts around the world and equipped it with two different production lines, one orthodox and one specialty, so we can meet the market demand where it's at. And really, the next part of chapter zero is to make good tea. And that'll really begin next April with the beginning of the 2025 tea harvest. So at this moment, we're just going through the permitting process and the organic certification so that come next April, when we're in a position to work with our farmer partners to make good tea.
Young Mountain has been selling Kumao tea since 2013. How was it processed before the factory was built?
The existing tea production across Kumao is done in government-owned and operated facilities. For about the last 25 years, all tea production has been managed by a government program. Their initial hope was that they would just be growing the tea and that private players would come and set up Botley factories. When that didn't happen, they were forced to set up their own processing facilities. But, you know, it's a government program whose objectives are to create livelihoods and not necessarily to make export-ready, world-class teas. So while they were phenomenally successful in doing the hardest part of tea by growing high elevation organic tea bushes, they haven't had the access to the resources and expertise to process those teas. And so that's where we can step in and help complete the loop.
That's very insightful, Raj. Governments look to tea to earn foreign exchange dollars and to employ people in rural areas. They're also trying to create jobs for women. There are many, sometimes conflicting missions. Low on their list of priorities is making exquisite tea with multiple certifications. Yet ultimately, that is where the real money lies. It makes sense to organize the business into two tiers. You can't keep everybody working if you produce only 10,000 kilos by hand. When a factory produces a million kilos or more, everybody has a job. But then only a tiny fraction will be graded as top of the crop.
You hit on two really important limitations to what's happening in Kumao right now. One is, as you said, the processing, the quality of the teas and the certifications necessary to do well in the international market just haven't been a priority for the government. They've been trying to bring in as many farmers and targeting women farmers specifically. And they, again, were successful in that, but the priority wasn't on making really high-value tea. The second part that as we pushed into this project, we learned is that the yield in Kumao is very low. It's about a fifth of what you would see in Darjeeling. So less than 100 kilos of made tea per hectare is on average what's happening now. So really to make this economically viable in the long run, there's more than just processing of quality teas that needs to happen. There have to be investments into increasing the yield. And that's actually the next chapter of our work, which we've already begun into and done some trial experiments with different regenerative organic practices. But that kind of represents the frontier in the long-term huge potential for this region is not only making good tea, but making enough of it to support 10,000 farmers.
Where do you turn for capital and expertise, and how do you jumpstart a long-term venture? I want to hear more about your vision.
The financing of this work really does fit into the bigger vision for what we're trying to achieve, which is system change. We're trying to create a totally new model for the way that this work can happen, and hopefully this isn't applicable just to tea, but more broadly to all forms of agriculture. And so the work is what blends what was traditionally held as two separate mentalities. It's both a for-profit side and a nonprofit side. So we've been fortunate to have grant support from customers like Frontier Co-op, from government agencies like USAID, from equity investors like Acumen, Young Mountain. We put in our own money. We have additional customers that are interested in supporting it, because what they're supporting is not just the creation of one facility in one region that's going to make them food safe teas, which is also accurate, but they're supporting a bigger vision for a future of tea that's actually going to work into the future. And so, yeah, the process of securing that capital and support has been one of just really trying to be true to the spirit of what got me started in this direction initially, which is just a firsthand experience with the gulf of opportunity that exists between very talented farmers on the other side of the world and Western markets. I think that if more people had a chance to just spend time in the villages where their tea is grown, they would come to see these not as just like kind of exoticized farmers, but as real humans with real aspirations and a ton of drive. Of course, there's limitations and challenges in politics and all of that kind of stuff as well. But as humans, and when we've been able to communicate the human story of this work, it really rings true in a way that leads to financing. But it's been a very interesting journey in that we have to stay true, and not just like in our marketing materials, but in the actual day-to-day work, we have to stay true to who this is ultimately trying to serve, which is tea farmers and predominantly women tea farmers. And as an American male, sometimes there are cultural differences, gender differences, socioeconomic differences that we have to be cognizant of. But I think that what I felt blessed to have is the support and trust of our funding partners that we're going to do the hard work of staying true to that initial vision and integrity to come good on what our promises are to the farmers that we serve.
I found the ecosystem of rural entrepreneurs resilient, optimistic, and heartening.
One of the things that got me interested in doing this work at all is how present the spirit of entrepreneurship is in rural areas, not driven by markets or trying to grow businesses, but out of straight necessity. It takes a level of creativity just to make things work when infrastructure is not as well established, when financial systems don't allow for capital to flow in easily. There's a lot of depending on yourself and depending on your community that I really admire, appreciate, and want to support. So just to say, generally, rural entrepreneurship is not something that needs to be coached to a lot of these communities. They've already got it. Maybe it's not packaged or expressed in the same form that we're used to in the U.S., but it's a very familiar mentality for a lot of people to make, including our co-founder and CEO of the processing facility, Desmond Birkbeck. He can make things work. And just a super short story about the kind of entrepreneurship we're talking about. So we imported two types of machinery, as I mentioned, one to make orthodox production. So, you know, SFTG, FOP1 down to fannings and dust. And then a second line to make what we're calling specialty tea, which is small scale machinery that's exclusively whole leaf tea. So when it's steeped, you get the full bud set that comes through in the cup. So that specialty equipment all came from China. And it was delivered with no instructions, and all of the signage on it was in Mandarin. And so Desmond and the crew there used Google Translate, holding it up against the different plates to understand what these machines were even for. Like, oh, here's the gas inlet. Here's where the exhaust is supposed to go. And they actually got all of the machinery to work. And I was just shocked by that. You know, like, that's a level of like, well, you know, I would be like, maybe we should call an expert. Maybe we should. No, they just grabbed in and dug in and figured it out. So anyway, that's just one example generally of the way the entrepreneurship is already present. But I guess what we're trying to do with this work and the ecosystem of support surrounding it is not have tea become a silver bullet solution that is a monocrop that becomes the only thing that farmers grow, but rather a backbone of support, an anchor to an annual income from a farmer. And all of the farmers that we work with aren't exclusively growing tea. They've dedicated a portion of the family's land to growing tea. And then they're also growing a lot of other food crops for both the home consumption as well as to sell in local markets. And so we think that's a really healthy approach, both for the farmers to have economic resilience against the failure of any one crop, but then also for the ecosystem as a whole, not to, as we know the limitations when you monoculture entire mountain sides. And so this is to get away from that.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of T-Biz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the T-Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.